yourself a song to sing, and sing it till you're done. Yes, sing it hard and sing it well. Send the robber barons straight to hell. The greedy thieves who came around and ate the flesh of everything they found, whose crimes have gone unpunished now, walk the streets a screaming now.
Hello, you 99 percenters. This is your host, Dr. Jack Rasmus. The show, Alternative Visions, where, as we've said many times, the focus is on what to do about the crisis, not just talking about its dimensions. And today we're really going to get into that focus. Today's topic, will the AFL-CIO Union Federation at its upcoming September convention strategically restructure itself, taking in community organizations on a more formal level with, quote, decision-making power, unquote, at the federation level? Now, there hasn't been much coverage of this, but recently the AFL-CIO's president, Richard Trumka, in fact, just last week on the 27th of July, held a press conference, and he talked about the decisions coming at the AFL-CIO convention in September to address this very question. Okay, let me quote some passages from what is only one source I've seen from the Wall Street Journal talking about this and picking up this press conference comment here. Okay, so let me give you some quotes before we go on to introduce our guest here and talk about this very important strategic question. All right. Looking at the Wall Street Journal of July 27, 28, quote from Trumka, what we've been doing sure hasn't been producing the results that we would like to see, and we have to change. All right, that's a direct quote in the paper attributed to Trumka. And the paper article goes on to say, the centerpiece of the strategy, which was hashed out with union presidents in Washington this week, and is expected to be unveiled to union members at a convention in September, involves bringing large grassroots groups such as the NAACP, the Hispanic Civil Rights Group, National Council of La Raza, the Sierra Club, under the Federation's umbrella and, let me quote here, giving them decision-making power, unquote. Okay, that's a direct quote from the this recent press article here. All right, and the question is, what does this portend? Is this something significant in terms of strategic development here or organizational change in AFL-CIO, or is it not? And I and my guests are going to talk about this. Now, the real causes, conditions behind this apparent possible shift is the American union movement. And American labor, organized labor, is in deep trouble. All right, anybody in it knows it, even the leadership. Membership is down to barely 11%, and that about half of that maybe in the private sector. You know, most of it is in, well, not most, but a big chunk of it is in the public sector. And, of course, public unions are under a big attack. Last year, union membership dropped by 500,000. At a time when 2 million jobs were created. So jobs are being created, albeit most of those are part-time temporary jobs, and union membership is falling at the same time. That's a very important development, and we're looking at ongoing massive cuts in public workers, particularly teachers, about 1 million so far in the last couple of years, and big cuts coming on postal workers. Housing is supposedly recovering, but jobs aren't in housing. Manufacturing supposedly has recovered in this country, but job creation has been flat to nothing, declining some months. So there's no light at the end of the tunnel for high-paid traditional union jobs, and in fact, they are disappearing. A big crisis. Wages and weekly earnings, of course, have been declining as well. We know that. The unions are under big attack on the pensions and health care front. defined benefit pensions have been converted under charges of fake bankruptcies, and we see that, of course, in Detroit and the public workers. Health care, Obama's ACA, Affordable Care Act, proposes a 40% tax by 2018 on union health care plans. And, of course, the employers now are already taking offensive here by capping what they're going to pay in the meantime. Tax on right-to-work laws and so forth across the board going on. It's a big crisis. In 10 years, labor won't exist as we know it if this continues. Okay, so the question is the AFL-CIO about to make an important strategic shift? Closer grassroots action ties with community organizations? Or is this just a top-level cover for more cooperative lobbying and election cooperation for 2014 midterm elections supporting the Democratic Party? Now, it's important to know that grassroots labor community action has been growing across the country, defending attacks on Social Security and Medicare, with retiree groups, unionists, and retiring groups like CARA in California, organizing efforts of fast food workers throughout the South and elsewhere. Again, grassroots labor community cooperation. The Chicago teachers' recent victory, that was done with parents' community support. Very critical. And then we have the very important Moral Mondays protest going on in North Carolina. That's not getting very much coverage, but is extremely important. And, quote, worker centers, and quote, nationwide are becoming more active. Union labor has been tied in knots by law since 1947. Those knots have been tightened by the courts and labor boards since 1980 at least. Okay? Community groups don't have the restrictions in terms of local action that unions do. In fact, these worker centers are becoming a source of worry for corporations, and there is some indication they are now asking the government and the labor board to do something about reclassifying these local groups as real unions and therefore bringing them under the legal web. By the way, I wrote a song in 2003 called The Web, all about this. And my book, my initial book in 2005 called The War at Home, talked about and proposed local community action committees parallel to the Central Labor Councils funded by the AFL-CIO and jointly chaired by community union organizations. I will reproduce that on my blog, jackrasmus.com, so people can look at my views on this. Okay, question. Is the AFL-CIO going to deepen local labor community actions now? Is a strategic shift possibly on the way that will have an impact at the local level? All right, I'm going to stop yakking, and I want my guests to take up that question. Let me introduce them properly at this point. Okay, we have three very interesting participants here. Steve Early, a long-time, 30-year, three-decade union representative, now retired for CWA, a lawyer, a journalist, a writer for too many periodicals to mention, including Boston Globe, New York Times, Washington Post, etc., author of a recent series of excellent books on the union movement today. His first a couple years ago, Embedded with Organized Labor, followed by another book, Civil Wars of U.S. Labor, and his newest, just out, Save Our Unions, Monthly Review Press. Check it out. Steve is also a member of the Green Shadow Cabinet, as is yours truly, and also very active at the local labor community level actions in Richmond, California, a hotbed of recent community union activity on a number of fronts. Okay, my other guest is Zach Robinson. Zach is an officer in the Professors Union, American Association of University Professors, in Greenville, North Carolina. Pitt County Coalition Against Racism, and a member of the executive board at the Pitt County chapter NAACP. More importantly, I think, is Zach has been directly active in what's called the Moral Mondays movement and protests in North Carolina. We're going to ask him to talk about that as well as comment on the bigger picture of the AFL-CIO convention. My third guest is longtime Philadelphia unionist and activist officer in the Newspaper Guild in Occupation Safety and Health, and on the board of the Pennsylvania Labor History Society, and also a member of the Green Shadow Cabinet, Jim Moran. Gentlemen, thank you. Steve, Zach, and Jim, thanks for coming on the show and willing to discuss this very important issue. Okay, I promised to shut up, and I'm about to do that and let these fellows give their view. Let's start by asking each of you the question. One, what does Trumka's announcement of closer organizational ties with national community organizations like La Raza Sierra Club and so forth portend? Is this a major strategic shift or just a cover for coordination for the 2014 midterm elections? Steve, you go first. Take this and run with it, and then Zach and Jim.
Thanks, Jack. Great questions and a terrific topic for today's show. You know, I try to be an optimist of the will, look at the upbeat side of things, and certainly there is a lot positive about the AFL-CIO's current quest for new ideas, new partners, stronger relationships with non-labor groups. I think, you know, there are some limitations to just roping together the walking wounded of liberalism inside the Beltway. You know, you can have a bigger tent somehow connecting in a more coordinated fashion the AFL-CIO with the allies that you mentioned. And, you know, it could still fall short of what we need at the base, at the rank-and-file level, at the grassroots, where, you know, you have wonderful examples like the Moral Mondays movement, the Wisconsin Uprising, what the Chicago teachers have been doing, what Jobs with Justice has been doing for years, which brings labor and community activists together into struggles where it really counts in the workplace, on the job, in the community, from the bottom up rather than the top down.
Okay, do you see this particular development as something that's substantial, you know, the announcement and the decision-making power?
I doubt there's going to be much real sharing of decision-making power. Behind the scenes, you know, the building trades unions, which are, you know, tend to be more conservative, I think are already expressing concerns about sharing power with, you know, non-labor groups in the fashion that's been discussed. I think something's going to be cobbled together that's going to look and sound good. I don't think on the ground, even inside the Beltway, it's going to change very much about the way these same organizations already try to work together.
So your view is that this is a kind of a statement of intent, but we're not going to see anything really organizationally significant come out of it.
Unless people take the ball and run with it. I mean, I'm a big fan of glasnost, you know, debate, discussion, listening sessions, searching for new ideas, and maybe not abandoning a few old ideas, which have been working pretty well, like the Jobs with Justice concept. I just think that for this really to make an impact on the lives of millions of union members and non-union workers and others in the communities where they live, change has to happen at the local level.
Okay, we're going to hold that, Steve. We're going to come back to what is going on and what is changing at the local level in terms of labor community direct actions, but we'll come back to that. Zach, are you there?
I'm here.
Okay, Zach, why don't you take that question and run with it. Is this announcement by Trumka, president of AFL-CIO, on closer organizational ties and a suggestion in the Wall Street Journal article that giving them decision-making power at the executive council level of the AFL-CIO, is this real? What's your view? What does this significant? Is this insignificant? What does it portend?
Jack, that's an excellent question. I'm so happy that you brought this to my attention. I had not heard before looking at the interview with Trumka that you mentioned that this announcement had occurred. My focus totally had been at the local level and also the statewide level here in North Carolina, where actually for over a year the state NAACP and allies have been in an extended discussion with the of national AFL-CIO on the question of bringing some funding to this state to develop a core of community organizers who would really, rather than directly be responsible to individual unions, or that would be more responsible to this really amazing coalition that has emerged over the last 6 to 8 years, the historic Thousands on Jones Street or Moral Monday or Forward Together. It goes under various names. But it's a very durable coalition that I think has generated a lot of attention within some of the leading people in the AFL-CIO. I know that people here are looking for a closer alliance, but one in which community organizations would really have, you know, would not be sort of junior partners. So what does this announcement by Trumka portend? The only thing I can think about is a similar announcement that was made in 2006 by the AFL, which admitted worker centers, not actually official, collective bargaining agents, but workers' centers that deal with workplace and other issues or may support union campaigns into the AFL-CIO as partners. To some extent, now this is already more than 6 years old, but to some extent it was had more of a formal significance. I could be wrong, but just judging from what the worker center movement here in North Carolina, it has sort of a formal significance. It has helped some of the worker centers with being able to operate at a reasonable level of capacity. But the thing is that we are in such a deep crisis, dealing with all the issues that you mentioned, that, things become possible in the midst of a crisis, crisis of numbers in the labor union movement, a crisis of economic pressure and so forth. Things become possible in crises or imaginable in crises that were not imaginable before. I just want to. I think you've posed the question very well. Look, could this just be some way to put together a more permanent form of a sort of a lobbying effort, or is this going to have some real consequences on the grassroots? And after you pointed out the announcement by Trumka, I saw a statement that Bill Fletcher wrote in Black Voice News on this announcement. And somewhere to the middle of his statement, what Bill says is, what the unions affiliated with the AFL-CIO will have to grasp is that if they are to reemerge as a vital force, millions of workers will need to see in them a vehicle in the fight for economic justice. If they are simply viewed as a lobby, they're toast.
That was kind of the question that was proposed. It's interesting that Bill Fletcher saw the same strategic choice here.
I think what Steve early was driving at is, a bit of a pessimism of the intellect, optimism of the will. It's a question of taking the ball and running with it. And part of that is, are we going to be given the resources to run with this ball at the grassroots level? And I think that's something that will emerge in time, and through some of these struggles, for example, that the community organizations in North Carolina are uniting together, to work with the AFL to see if we can't ramp that up a little bit.
You mentioned in your comments just a second ago about this tension between the community groups' actions in North Carolina there and the state-level AFL-CIO. You feel you know, able to elaborate on that a little bit? Would there be a resistance at the state level organization of the AFL-CIO to this kind of closer, direct action?
Well, it's a very interesting question. You know, the state AFL-CIO has from the very early days of the historic Thousands on Jones Street movement, which is the force behind these Moral Monday protests, has been a partner in this, along with North Carolina Council of Churches. But now, you know, after the complete disaster of the last election rounds, which led to a Republican, or actually Tea Party, takeover of the governor's post, the state Senate, the state House, you know, that's when these Moral Mondays, you know, people realized that we had to take advantage of the First Amendment of the Constitution, which gives us the right to protest and to demand actions, another democratic channel outside of elections and lobbying and so forth. And we realized we just had to take advantage of that. You know, the other avenues have been closed to us. And in this effort, which resulted in over 1,000 arrests so far, to be honest, AFL-CIO was exceedingly cautious in participating. It really wasn't until rather more recently that the State Federation, you know, finally did decide to participate openly. And, of course, when they did, you know, they publicized to all of the member unions, to all the affiliates of the State Federation, that they called on them to join either in the civil disobedience action as well as to the you know, support action that took place around. And James Andrews, the State Federation president, was arrested in the state legislature after leading people in singing Solidarity Forever. They weren't you know, on the leading edge of this, and it's really, but the fact that at the grassroots, the sentiment, the degree of organization, the fact that people have been willing to stick to this tough campaign, which involves, North Carolina's a big state, it involves a lot of travel. You know, out where I am, you know, I'm about 100 miles east of where the protests are occurring. You know, we have carloads of people going every single week, which takes a tremendous amount of sustained effort with no funding at all. And, you know, we're looking at some of these protests, like the last one that occurred in Raleigh, reached some 12,000 people. You know, this type of effort at the grassroots simply can't be ignored by any force, really. And it has brought forward, you know, it has cut through some of the reluctance. So, you know, it's this kind of, I don't know, chicken and the egg type process where you know, the real force of it, though, is coming from the base. And so, yes, there is resistance, but so far, you know, the movement has been irresistible. And that's what I alluded to when I'm saying certain things in crisis are possible when they weren't before. It's a question of, can a sort of irresistible motion like this be built up? Because once that happens, that's when some of the formal, you know, proposals can, you know, come to life.
Well, hold that, Zach, and we'll get back to your description of what's going on and what might be going on with Moral Mondays and actions at the local level there in North Carolina. But I want to give Jim Moran a chance to grapple with this key question. Jim, you there?
Yeah.
Okay, Jim, what do you think Trumka's announcement of closer organizational ties with national community organizations portends? Is this a beginning of a strategic shift of import, or is this just new wine in old bottles?
Well, I'm sort of optimistic. This is rather late coming, it seems to me. The elephant in the room is the lack of class consciousness in the United States, which has been through 50 years of propaganda kind of beaten out of the labor movement. People call themselves middle class. They don't call themselves working class. Nixon said back in his day, anybody that makes more than $10,000 a year is in the middle class. And many working people don't want to be called working class. So, I mean, they're really out of touch with that whole thing. And the successes in Europe over the years have come because of a much greater social consciousness and class consciousness that doesn't exist here. And I think that's been killing us. And how workers who are not in unions view unions, in many cases, is, as Mazzocchi used to say, we're not part of a social club, we're part of a social movement. And we haven't really taught that very well to our members, quite frankly, in this country. And many union members don't even know what union they're in. I've worked in coalitions and worked with unions on job safety issues for the last 40 years. And many people call because they got injured at work or whatever the reason, or chemical exposure, asbestos, whatever it might be. And you ask what union they're in, and they say, well, it's AFL or something like that. They're not even conscious of their own union. I wish I had a dollar for every union president that apologized to me when I was invited to a union meeting to speak or something. When they say, I apologize for the turnout here, we got 1,000 members, but only about 20 of them show up for meetings. Yeah, that kind of thing. This move being made by Trump, first of all, I applaud it. I'm somewhat optimistic, though cautious. And I think many organizations will react, as you have been mentioning, with some suspicion and with caution. But the point is, the move is being made, and it's way overdue, long needed. We don't win nothing without coalition building. And that's just the history of it. And these are the kinds of coalitions we need. And giving them some power within the movement, within the AFL-CIO, I think it's a great thing. You know, yeah, there'll be some resistance to that, I'm sure. But what does it portend? I think it portends something good. And I applaud it. And I think it's way overdue.
And, of course, we're still at the early stage of this. This is just some indication of discussions going on. It's not anything that's really clarified, and I presume we'll see more clarification after the convention. But, you know, there are some folks at the top in the union hierarchy here that seem to be leaning in this direction. And, of course, they are very pragmatic, and they see that, Chicago teachers, they one victory here among many defeats because of the community cooperation here. Fast food workers throughout the South, sort of young folks taking it on themselves and going forward. Moral Mondays, workers centers that, even the corporations are beginning to look at and eye with some suspicion this may be something new here. When they take a look at it, then it means that it might have some significance to it. We haven't yet seen defense of Social Security with local clubs. Social Security, for the history of it, was formed by local community actions. It wasn't a top-down thing from the labor movement back in the 1930s.
When labor moved away from the social agenda and paid close attention to its memberships, with pensions and wages and so forth, they did pretty good during an expanding economy back when. It was clear that they made a decision to play with legislative politics and electoral politics, but not street politics. That was a clear decision was made.
But are we moving back to that, maybe? I mean, the article itself, Larry Cohen, from the president of CWA, quote here, he believes the labor movement can double or triple the number of workers it can reach by partnering with these kind of groups. Leo Girard, president of the U.S. Steelworkers, quote, we need to go back to a much more coordinated approach with progressive groups, unquote. That's from the Wall Street Journal article. We need to take a break here. We're going to take a short break. But I want all of you to think about when we come back, and I'll query each one of you, what's going on at the grassroots level in terms of labor community, union community cooperation and action that supports this view from the bottom up that maybe out of necessity Unions are realizing they must work more closely, not just in elections, but in day-to-day grassroots struggles here with community groups. Keep that under your hat, and we'll come back, Steve, pick that one up, and what's happening locally and along this front. This is Jack Rasmus. The show is Alternative Vision. We're going to take a short break here, and we'll be back with that subject.
Now sometimes tomorrow comes soaked in treasure and blood. Here we stood the job, now we'll stand the flood. There's a new world coming, I can see the light. I'm a jack of all trades. We'll be all right.
You are listening to PRN.FM, the Progressive Radio Network.
Listeners, I'm your host, Patricia Shepherd, for Idle No More Indigenous Report, reporting and discussing current issues and challenges facing federally recognized tribes here in the United States and the First Nations in Canada. You will hear issues surrounding fishing, hunting, and gathering rights, environmental threats to land, water, and air, and we will listen and discuss music, language, and tradition. You can listen to Idle No More Indigenous Report on Wednesday evenings at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. If you'd like to listen to Idle No More Indigenous Report live, you can listen 24/7 on the archive at PRN.FM. The Progressive Radio Network is moving forward, and we hope you are coming with us.
All right, so I was back in high school, and we were in biology class. We're learning about dissecting frogs. And I think to myself, hey, I'm a journalist. Why can't I dissect the news? And so I started doing it. And I have the newsdissector.net blog, and I have News Dissector Radio here on the Progressive Radio Network every Thursday from 5 to 6 p.m. I'm Danny Schechter, your News Dissector. Join me here. PRN, the Progressive Radio Network, is moving forward, and we hope you are coming with us.
The Dr. Peter Breggin Hour interviews the most exciting innovators in the field of mental health, from therapists and researchers to advocates of patient rights. Join me and other pioneers in psychology, psychiatry, and empathic living with the aim of improving your life and the lives of everyone you touch. Wednesdays at 4 p.m. Eastern Time. Listen live or on the archives 24/7 at PRN.FM. Don't forget to rate the show on iTunes. The Progressive Radio Network is moving forward, and we hope you are coming with us.
You're listening to PRN, the Progressive Radio Network.
Hello, this is Jack Rasmus, the show Alternative Visions. The topic today is there a major strategic structural change in the works at very early stages in the AFL-CIO based on some recent reported press conferences by AFL-CIO President Richard Trumka and decisions forthcoming at the September AFL-CIO convention. Well, we broke off here where I asked each of my guests to think about responding to what's going on locally, what is happening in their regions in terms of labor community action. And let me just throw out the last paragraph quote from this Wall Street Journal article that said, quote, Mr. Trumka described the Federation's latest effort as getting, quote, back to the future, unquote, recalling that in the 1920s and 30s there was a model of partnership between labor and other groups, unquote. All right, that's the last thing I'm going to say about that article. Let's ask each one of them, what's going on that portends more grassroots effort in this direction? Maybe the AFL-CIO is just trying to figure out how to bring this growing grassroots level under more control and to reorient it, redirect it towards electing politicians who don't deliver anything anymore to us. Or maybe it's a way of the FL-CIO trying to see how it can better structure these activities going on locally and funnel it into more union organizing, etc. Or maybe it's something else. But let's talk about what's going on locally. Steve, I know you're in Richmond, California there, and that's a kind of a hotbed of community action.
Republic of Richmond, we call it.
Republic of Richmond, okay. What's going on there?
After our huge labor and environmental rally last Saturday at the gates of Chevron. Let me come back, Jack, if I could, to a couple of good points that Zach and Jim made. I would agree with them that the real litmus test of the seriousness of this latest AFL initiative is going to be around the question of spending priorities. Is the national AFL, excuse me, and major national unions willing to put more money into community labor coalition building of one sort or another and divert some of the many millions that we know they spend on electoral politics? And as you mentioned, often the campaigns of Democrats and sometimes Republicans who purport to be friends of labor take the money, get elected, and don't do what they promised to do. I've been rattling the tin cup within my union and the larger labor movement for over 20 years for Jobs with Justice. I think it's a terrific model, very successful in many parts of the country, for bringing labor and the community together in workers' rights fights at the community level. And I know that it has always been very, very hard to get adequate funding from both local unions and national unions for the activities of the Jobs with Justice Coalition Network. The same is true, I'm sure, in Jim's experience with the COSH Network, the Occupational Health and Safety Group. So if this current discussion leads to people at the top of the labor movement, those who control the purse strings, putting their money where their mouth is, we'll all be better off. But in my experience, it takes a lot of banging on doors before people start writing checks for the kind of exciting activity that Zach just reported on from North Carolina.
Great. What's going on in Richmond?
In Richmond, as you know, the major industrial employer here is Chevron. We had a huge refinery fire and explosion a year ago that almost killed some steelworkers in the plant and, of course, created a huge pollution problem of a very dramatic sort for thousands of people in the surrounding area. Had to go and seek hospital treatment. There have been many investigations of the accident since then. The city is suing Richmond to secure damages for the losses suffered by both individuals and the community. The most exciting thing over the weekend was that we had a rally here and a march by 2,500 people, collaboration between local activists in the Richmond Progressive Alliance and our great green mayor, Gail McLaughlin, and the national environmental organization, 350.org. This was a great display of kind of labor and environmental solidarity. There were 300 or 400 union members in the mix, and it really shows that at the grassroots anyway, there's a lot of concern about the issue of global warming among union members.
I've heard that also in Richmond there's a movement to enact eminent domain to deal with foreclosures and the housing crisis. Can you say something about that? Is there a labor security
effort? Yeah, it was reported on it at great length on the front page story in the New York Times last week, but one of the many progressive initiatives of the mayor and her allies on the city council has been to try to use the eminent domain powers of the city to forestall further foreclosures. About half the people with mortgages in the city of Richmond, population of about 100,000, are underwater at the moment and still struggling to make their payments and hold on to their homes. So there's obviously going to be a legal challenge over the city's powers or creative use of eminent domain powers, but it's basically an attempt to provide municipal support for homeowners locally and push bank back on the banks that are still putting the squeeze on people.
How about at the education level? What kind of cooperation between the educational unions, teachers' unions, and the community? Is there anything identifiable there going on that looks remotely like Chicago?
Well, I would say that the Richmond Teachers Association, which has many fine activists, has not played the leading role in the community here that the Chicago Teachers Union has. Sometimes that takes some internal reform activity, the election of new leadership, and a new approach. There certainly are other teacher union activists in the Bay Area, particularly in Oakland, who, when the Occupy movement was strong there several years ago, played a very prominent role. And teachers of all public workers certainly understand best that when faced with the onslaught and the attacks from corporate America today, their only hope of surviving is to build alliances with the communities that they serve, parents and teachers and everybody else concerned about the fate of public education.
Is the labor community cooperative efforts in Richmond really individual union workers participating with community groups, or is there some has there been any kind of official local union endorsements and support for these efforts of the community to fight Chevron and so forth in Richmond?
It really varies. You know, there are some more conservative unions in town. The police and firefighters have tended to back kind of the conservative old guard Democrats who are more Chevron allies on the city council. The building trades have expressed a lot less concern about the need to ensure safe operations of the refinery. Meanwhile, members of the United Steelworkers, who are direct employees of Chevron and also work there, have been, since the disaster a year ago, become much more active. And in the public sector, you know, we have a very good local chapter of the Service Employees International Union, which represents municipal workers. They're supporters of our Green Mayor and our City Council initiatives. And, you know, you have members of other individual unions who've been very active in the Richmond Progressive Alliance and other community groups.
How about the Labor Council up there, the County Labor Council? Has it taken any stand endorsing?
Well, you know, one of our progressive initiatives that we waged a brave fight for, what was defeated at the ballot last fall, was an attempt to deal with the epidemic of obesity here in Richmond. It was a proposed cent per ounce tax on sugary drinks, on soda. It was something that healthcare people supported, that folks in low-income groups were somewhat divided on, but it had support from the progressive leadership in the city. I'm sad to say that the Labor Council, at the behest of the Teamsters, opposed this, thought it would be a threat to the jobs of Teamster delivery drivers, and a very important public health measure opposed very strenuously by the beverage industry. It was spent hundreds of thousands of dollars a year campaigning against it, was unfortunately defeated.
Well, it sounds like there's a lot of ad hoc protest and activity going on in Richmond. Zach, we know North Carolina, Moral Mondays, a lot going on there as well. What can you tell us about local labor community cooperative actions there in Moral Mondays and whatever other movements there? And where do you see that going down the road?
Well, all right, well, that's a good question. North Carolina, as we probably all know, has the lowest rate of unionization of all the 50 states. And very often, well, I'll just speak about my own small town, Greenville, which is eastern part of North Carolina, which is actually the most impoverished part of the state. I think some people think of Appalachia as the poorest part, but it actually is the eastern coastal plain with the it's the area in which has the highest concentration of African Americans and Native Americans and now Latinos. Here we the wow I mean Greenville I'm part of a church ministry and have been, you know, for nearly 20 years now, which was formed in response to some of the activity. I think actually in response to the Million Man March some years ago, in the mid 90s, and you know, just sort of dire poverty, long-term grinding poverty here in Pitt County, and terrible working conditions, a lot of which have a deep racist inflection. And one of the large, predominantly black churches said, you know, we would just have to do something about this. We need to put together a kind of a ministry where people can seek us out. You know, there aren't unions. There are very few. There's a postal workers. There's a teachers association, which is an affiliate of NEA. Many of the teachers, up until very recently, had a hard time thinking of themselves as a union. We had a state employees association now affiliated with SEIU, but at the time really it included the governor and all of that. It was a sort of nebulous organization put together for the purpose of getting discounts at Wendy's. So the community just lacked, people in the community lacked a force that would be willing to go to bat for them, who understood what a workplace grievance is. And, you know, how do you fight racial discrimination? Is there something besides the EEOC? Well, how do you actually contact the EEOC? All of these things. And so, you know, a nucleus of us began to say, okay, we're just going to dig in and do this. We are going to be the missing shop stewards for the missing unions. And, you know, sometimes we had very, very few people at our meetings, but now we have a very consistent group. And what has happened is, as retirees with a lot of union experience begin to move back south in their retirement, they will, you know, come to us and volunteer to take on, you know, some of these battles. And it has really, you know, it's been a very, you know, sort of a new model of labor organizing, you know, along with all the other new models that have emerged just out of necessity. You know, it's a sort of bare-fisted thing. We don't really have any money. So no lawyers, except we have some advice on that direction. But, you know, it's just the community people with labor experience sharing that experience and that willingness to battle, you know, just doggedly. That, you know, it's just galvanized the community. Our meetings are packed now, and they have been for some couple of years. You know, we work alongside other groups. So this is one of the reasons why, you know, it has led to things like the NAACP chapter here is the largest in the state, even though we're far from a big city. You know, we're a city of 75,000 at most. And it just let the community is really pulled together, so it enables us to do things like participate to a very high degree in the Moral Monday protests and other things like that. And it has really raised, we've been working with the teachers and trying to raise their consciousness of, well, what does a union do? What is collective bargaining? You know, things like this that people are not necessarily fully aware of. So, you know, that's what it looks like at the local level. I just want to get back to something Jim Moran said, which is, you know, just looking at things, you need coalitions to win. And I think that it's worth understanding what different sorts of coalitions have emerged. And, you know, at the largest level, people talk, you know, enthusiastically, and I think we all probably agree, maybe sometimes over-enthusiastically, especially in 2008, around the coalition that came together just around the great hope and promise that President Obama offered to finish some of the unfinished legacy of the civil rights movement and so forth. But that coalition alone really began to drift, and I think many people are just disappointed in some of the results. I think some people mentioned the negative consequences of the attacks on the health care plans under the health care reform and so forth. And we see that kind of coalition isn't enough. It just drifts. It's too broad. It drifts with the flow of the wealthy corporate elite who have the power to make such things drift. But then we have the possibility that's being that's really sort of recognizing the way things are, that there's a community of interest at a much tighter level between labor and these groups like Sierra Club dealing with environment, NAACP, La Raza. These are not necessarily the most cutting edge groups, but even the Sierra Club had to say, look, it's come down to we have to be ready to get arrested, you know, and they got arrested over at the Keystone protest at the White House. You know, and so what we're looking at is a tighter form of a coalition around the working class and its natural allies in the environmental African American Latino women's movement. And you know, but even that isn't enough, because what we're talking about is, well, there is a political battle within that coalition. Just being real, you know, there are some who just say, no, you know, the way forward is to continue to do this lobbying, and I'm a lobbyist, by, you know, or let's say someone may think that in the group, and it's a heavily bureaucratized organization, let's face it, that's part of the problem, and that has a tremendous amount of force. But there's another side to that. You know, there are really honest people fighting, as Steve mentioned, you know, the tremendously inspiring here in Richmond, California, with the Chevron refinery, that you have union workers saying, you know what, we're people too. We're not just defined by a paycheck, you know. We care about the world, and we're going to fight for it. And you have people like that who will respond, you know, just like we've seen here in North Carolina. There is a political battle, but to organize that, we still need another level of coalition. And I noticed with great satisfaction that a couple of our guests are, and you yourself, Jack, are members of the Green Shadow Cabinet. It takes what's called a left to recognize the systemic nature of the problems we face and to galvanize people to say, you know, we may need to look at some other channels, you know. So I think there are three levels of coalition that we can now talk about for the first time. Where it goes, we have no idea, really. Things are at the state left is very weak. This tighter coalition around the working class and its allies is, God knows what the direction is. But for the first time, we can talk about something else besides this sort of nebulous, broad hope-based things that tend to drift.
I think, Zach, your point about where does it go, is going to require a higher level of organization,
yes,
both at the local level and at the,
yes,
national level here. I want to give Jim Moran a chance to tell us what's going on in his view locally in a larger city, Philadelphia, his backyard there. We've talked about a smaller city on the West Coast, Richmond, Bay Area, very liberal. We talked about almost the opposite in terms of liberalism or whatever you want to call it, progressivism. Not to confuse the two, in North Carolina, where unions are very weak. Jim, what does it look like in terms of labor community efforts, cooperation in Philadelphia area, Northeast?
Yeah,
about 3 minutes here. We're running out of time. Give us your view, Jim.
Well, first I would mention that there are any number of, a large number of labor community cooperative efforts going on. Rock, the Restaurant Opportunity Center, who teaches restaurant workers how to get out of the dishwashing end of it and move into the bartending and waitress end of things and make a better living, that's going very well. And there are groups not only in Philadelphia but in a dozen cities around the country. That movement is expanding. And they're housed in my own union hall in the Newspaper Guild Communication Workers of America, Local 38010. So there's very good cooperation there. And Jobs with Justice, a very strong chapter in Philadelphia. The steelworkers at Sunoco put together a labor community coalition that helped save the refinery. Sunoco was shutting down. They ended up working out a deal with a new buyer and saved hundreds and hundreds of jobs there, and it was a broad effort. A broad coalition was built around that by the steelworkers, Jim Savage leading that fight, and the labor community cooperation and Save the Schools. There's a great coalition there fighting every part of what's happening to the schools, trying to save the schools and also fight the school-to-prison pipeline system. And, you know, there's a whole lot going on here. I mean, Philippi has been here for 38 years, a coalition of about 100 unions. that works with very hand in hand with community groups around a variety of issues, and the fight in the city council in Philadelphia to get people sick days and sick time off. It came within a vote, one vote, of succeeding. Very vigorous fight there. So on and on and on. There's a lot of this stuff going on, like labor in the pulpit and, you know, the labor with the churches. At every direction, it is just coalition buildings going on in 50 different directions. You know what I mean? So I think there's a healthy part of it here in Philadelphia. And one thing I would also say is that the leadership of the Philadelphia AFL-CIO has been very open to working with all kind of community groups, and that's a real positive thing. So, I mean, it's happening in various cities around the country, this labor community cooperation stuff is in coalition building. It's here. I think it's only just being recognized now by the top leadership of the AFL that wants to put something further together, and that's a good thing. I don't want to see it go the way of, there was something called the Progressive Alliance in the late 70s, early 80s. Doug Fraser, who was the head of the auto workers, was the chair of the thing. And every group you could think of signed on to be part of this Progressive Alliance with labor and community and so forth. And they held their first convention and talked about reforming the Democratic Party. I don't think they had another meeting after that. Everybody went home. We can't do that. We have to... Labor organizing is taking on new forms, and these are the forms, some of the things I just mentioned, stuff that you guys have been mentioning. It's all over the place. It just needs to be, the energy needs to be harnessed and moved in a good direction with some goals that are about social good, the social welfare of all working people, and focus on that kind of thing, healthcare and ideas along those lines. And stop being sidetracked by these wedge issues and so forth. And
great. Well, this has been a great discussion, and I want to offer a follow-up discussion, perhaps with all of you after the convention, after we see what's happened and get perhaps more clarification. But you know, just to offer my two cents on this thing. What we've got locally is, as all of you have indicated, a lot of activity, and it's growing, and labor-community cooperation. But it seems to me that unless we have some organizational structure for this local activity ongoing, that we descend into what I've critiqued here often on the show of the bane of progressive politics in America, which is single-issue politics. We go from one single issue to the next. Now, you know, you start that way, but somehow we've got to find an organizational expression for ongoing cooperation. And I think Steve Early mentioned it, you know, if you're going to have some real organization at the grassroots level, it's going to take effort and it's going to take some money. The AFL-CIO has to put some skin in the game here to fund some kind of local community efforts. Now, some will say we got the Central Labor Councils, but come on, you know, Central Labor Councils sit around and they vote on candidates and, you know, they give perfunctory strike authorization, and not much comes out of that. You know, once again, in my book in 2005, The War to Home, The Corporate Offensive from Reagan to Bush, what I proposed was a local mobilization committees that had full-time paid organizers, one from the community and one identified from the labor councils, and this structure would organize the shock troops of labor in the community to support, you know, boycotts and strikes and so forth, but also community actions like going on in Richmond. Anyway, I'm not going to elaborate on that. If folks want to see my views, I will put it up on my blog, jackrasmus.com. But I think organization has to come out of this. I mean, look at the Occupy movement, you know. It's disappeared. Why? They didn't believe in organization. You just can't avoid the organizational question, I think. Maybe this AFL-CIO convention decision will legitimize some form of tighter organization efforts at the local level. Well, anyway, I've had my say on that. And, gentlemen, I'd like to thank you all for your excellent comments on this important question, and we will come back and revisit this. Thank you, Steve, Zach, and Jim.
Thank you.
This is
thank
all
you.
Thank you.
Thank you.